Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama is feeling the heat from gay supporters. They want Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. Obama has pledged to repeal it. Gay and straight veterans supporting the change are launching a national campaign, Voices of Honor, to keep the heat on. But opponents of open gay service in the U.S. military are speaking up, too. Today we'll hear from members of the Voices of Honor campaign, from Congressman Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania, who has been leading the repeal charge in Congress, and we'll hear pushback this hour on Point in the fray again over Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You can join the conversation. Is it time to drop Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Is the country ready, more than ready, not ready for open gay military service? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Laura Meckler, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She's been following the back and forth over Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Laura, thanks very much for being here.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Where does this stand right now? We go back to 1993 when Bill Clinton, early in his first term, tried to push through a big change here, ended up with this compromise. Where does it stand today? And is there action in Congress to really change it, Laura?
Well, where it stands today is basically the policy that Bill Clinton put in place remains in place. And, of course, Barack Obama, when he was campaigning for president, promised to overturn that policy. But in his first, what's it been, five and a half months in office, he really hasn't done much towards that end. What he said is that he's waiting for Congress to act in the sense that he says a permanent fix would need congressional action, because that policy, that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, was in fact put into law by Congress and then signed by the president. So it's led to a lot of frustration in the gay rights community, because they feel like, you know, he really said he would get on this and hasn't. There's not a lot to show for it. In Congress, there hasn't been much move along these lines either. They've been taking on some other a little less hot gay rights issues, for instance, hate crimes law and that sort of thing. Those are first up on their schedule for dealing with these issues. And so the bottom line is not a lot has changed.
We've got a little tape here from Carl Levin of Michigan, chairman now of the Senate's Armed Services panel, saying that he supports repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but hasn't agreed to committee hearings on the issue.
I haven't gone there because there's been no reason to go there until I think that there's a real chance of ending it, you know, of changing the policy. And I have not felt that until recently, that there was a real chance of changing this policy, because the administration did not support that change at this time. I think they do support the change at a different time when they might be able to actually succeed.
Laura Meckler, is President Obama then saying, yes, I'm for the repeal, but it's up to Congress? It'll happen when Congress makes it happen, period?
Well, it's kind of a little more muddled than that. I mean, he has been clear that he supports changing the policy. After that, it's a lot less clear. What he has basically said is, we need Congress to act. Yes, and then of course the natural follow up is, well, are you doing anything to urge Congress to act? And they say, oh, we're talking to people. He says the Pentagon is working on some policy discussions about how they could transition to a new policy, what a new policy could be. And so that's all kind of amorphous of what's going on over at the Pentagon. He says, though, that he's asked them to begin working on this. So it's all a little bit vague. I think what the White House is trying to do is portray that there is movement in this direction without doing anything real dramatic. And this is to somewhat state the obvious, you know, the politics of this are complicated. Now, I think that the issues of gays serving in the military has changed a lot since Bill Clinton was president, and public polling certainly shows that there's a lot more support than there used to be. Having said that, you know, he does not want to make the same mistake that Clinton made, which was to have his whole, you know, early presidency, you know, derailed by a conversation about this when there are obviously a lot of other things he's trying to get done.
I wonder about opinion in the Pentagon, the U.S. military itself. I want to ask you about that, but let's listen first to a recent event at the National Press Club. Here was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, saying that the president, President Obama, had made his position on Don't Ask, Don't Tell clear to him.
The strategic intent of the president is very clear. He wants to change this policy, and that will also take a change in the law.
So there, like a good soldier, he's saying this: the intent is clear, but it doesn't. He's not saying he's pushing for that. We saw back in March a letter from 1,000 or so retired high officers in the U.S. military opposing a change in Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is it clear whether the leadership in the Pentagon is for or against or divided?
Yeah, I don't feel like I have a good handle on exactly where the leadership in the Pentagon is. I think that the political leadership, you know, the very top people are, you know, certainly supporting what their boss wants. You know, when you go a little bit, you know, one step below that, I think it's harder to assess.
And so looking forward, we're going to speak with Congressman Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania. He's got legislation out there, but you're saying right now you don't see the political troops lined up behind it necessarily.
No, and if you talk, I mean, for instance, if you talk to supporters in the House about this, they say that they want to sort of slowly build, and they're talking about four pieces of legislation, and I believe that this is the third or fourth on that list. I think hate crimes is first, employment non-discrimination. Those are the sort of easier things, you know, that they want to try to do, and they haven't even yet done. Congress has not succeeded in doing either of those yet. Then there's also the Defense of Marriage Act, which is another important issue on the gay rights agenda. And then, you know, you get to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So it's there. I think we're a ways away. We'll see what your next guest has to say about what the prospects are. But, you know, truthfully, I have not picked up any urgency from the congressional leadership on this issue. And, you know, in their defense, they're trying to pass climate change, health care, financial deregulation, you know, on and on. But this has certainly not risen.
There's a lot on their plate. Laura Meckler with The Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for being with us today, Laura.
You bet.
Voices of Honor is a national campaign tour in support of repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy of the U.S. military. It's been launched by the Human Rights Campaign, the country's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender civil rights organization, with Service Members United, an organization of gay and lesbian troops and veterans and their straight allies. They're touring the country starting this month. Two Voices of Honor members join us today. From San Antonio, Texas, Eric Alva is here. He joined the Marines in 1990 at 19. He retired as a Marine Staff Sergeant in 2004. In March 2003, Alva's unit crossed Kuwait's border into Iraq for the start of Operation Iraqi Freedom. 3 hours into the ground war, he stepped out of his vehicle and triggered a landmine. His left leg and right arm were broken. His right leg had to be amputated. He was the first American wounded in the Iraq War and its first Purple Heart recipient. He's gay. Eric Alva, thank you for your service. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Irvine, California, is Julie Sohn, a former Marine Corps captain who served in Fallujah, Iraq. She was active duty from 99 to 03 and in the reserves from 2003 to 2008 when she was discharged for speaking publicly for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She's lesbian, now works for the Los Angeles Police Department and volunteers with the Voices of Honor campaign. Julie Sohn, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Julie, first to you. Why have you decided to step up and join the campaign? You've been out of the military for a year or so now. What's put you back, you know, sort of on the ground, on tour, speaking out for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
For me, it's definitely personal. I was forced to resign my commission under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, and I feel in a lot of ways this is fundamentally a civil right. And for me, one of the greatest honors was serving in the United States military. And I feel that a lot of people don't really hear from the men and women who served under this policy. And I think for me, it's just a matter of getting the story out of there are men and women now on the ground who are gay serving in the military honorably. But the difference right now is because of this policy, if we even say that we're gay or mention our partner, we can get discharged.
And that's exactly what happened with you, I guess, in speaking up for repeal. Eric Alva, how about you? What's brought you back into the fray on this issue now?
You know, for me, Tom, losing my leg was a huge sacrifice. And I think for me, the personal perspective of almost losing my life and then realizing that when we went to war, it was of course on the fight of the war on terrorism post 9/11 in Afghanistan as such. And I think for me, I had forgotten the fact that what I was fighting for was for the rights and freedoms. And as Julie said, the civil rights of the people of this country. And you know, when we take an oath to serve our country and as honorably and as patriotic as my grandfather did, who served in World War II in Korea, and my father in Vietnam during the Tet Offense, you know, it's to protect the rights and freedoms and liberties of the people of this nation, not just some of them, not the selected few. That meant every single individual. And I think for me as a person who has a second chance at life, you know, it's about the equality and the freedom of people to live where they want, work where they want, serve honorably for a nation that they so believe in and are patriotic. And, you know, and for the oppression to finally, you know, be over in this country, it's very personal. It's, you know, I was highly decorated with 5 Navy Marine mm-hmm. Corps Achievement Medals. I was a person who did my job, but, you know, it's time that we let people be who they are and, you know, not face any discrimination whatsoever.
Do you think President Obama will, that he can, deliver on his promise to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
I'm optimistic. I believe he will. But as Laura stated earlier, you know, it's you know, there's other things on the agenda and there's things that we have to. So I think the tour is going to bring attention to people and some people who are unfamiliar with the basics of what this policy has done in the last 15 years.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new push to accept gays in the U.S. military, to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Talking with members of the new national campaign, Voices of Honor. We will hear later in this hour from a service member saying no thank you to a change in this policy. Here's President Obama at the end of June at a reception at the White House commemorating the 40th anniversary of the so-called Stonewall Rebellion, the uprising that gave rise to the modern gay rights movement. He spoke about the military's policy of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
I believe Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't contribute to our national security. In fact, I believe preventing patriotic Americans from serving their country weakens our national security.
There's his position. He also spoke, though, about what he called about his responsibility as president.
As commander-in-chief in a time of war, I do have a responsibility to see that this change is administered in a practical way and a way that takes over the long term. That's why I've asked the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a plan for how to thoroughly implement a repeal.
A repeal, but long term. There's plenty of opposition. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham here, prosecutor in the Air Force Reserve, member of the Senate's Armed Services Panel. Here he is saying he believes Don't Ask, Don't Tell has served the country well.
I'm not going to be persuaded to change military policy by a bunch of political activists. If the military leadership tells me that Don't Ask, Don't Tell needs to be changed, I'll certainly be open-minded to that.
We're joined in this hour by two members of the Voices of Honor campaign. Eric Alva joins us from San Antonio, Texas, retired Marine Corps Staff Sergeant, the first American wounded in the Iraq War. His broken leg, broken arm, and amputated leg as a result of that wound, a landmine, after he came across the border from Kuwait. From Irvine, California, former Marine Corps Captain Julie Sona is with us, served in Fallujah in Iraq, now also a volunteer with Voices of Honor. And right now from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Congressman Patrick Murphy. He represents Pennsylvania's 8th District in the eastern part of Pennsylvania. He's lead sponsor of what has been dubbed the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, legislation that would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's working closely with the Voices of Honor campaign to try to get it passed. He was the first Iraq War veteran elected to Congress, served in Baghdad from 03 to 04 as a captain in the Army's elite 82nd Airborne Division. Congressman Murphy, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's great to be with you today, and it's great to be with two American heroes, and Sergeant Alva and Captain Song. My only complaint about those two is that they weren't paratroopers in the Army's 82nd Airborne Division, but if you can't be in the 82nd Airborne Division, the Marine Corps is not a bad place to be.
Congressman, why are you pushing for this, and why now?
Well, Tom, it really goes to the crux of our national security. It's vital for national security to have the best and the brightest in our military, and it makes no sense whatsoever when our American heroes are fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we need every able-bodied American to serve, to kick out over 13,000 troops. That's over 3.5 combat brigades.
That's the number kicked out, discharged since 1993.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it's, and they're kicked out not because of sexual misconduct, just because they were gay, and that is just wrong.
You know, you were asked at the National Press Club, you said a lot of people ask you, why is a straight Irish Catholic former altar boy fighting for this? So it's a matter of justice in your view. What about military effectiveness?
I think they go hand in hand, Tom. And the fact that, you know, I took an oath as an Army officer, as a paratrooper, and also as a congressman to support and defend the Constitution. And that means that everyone in America is treated equally and can serve in our military equally. But I also serve in the Armed Services Committee, and that means giving the best policy we can for armed services. And that means making sure that every able-bodied, qualified American can serve if they choose to, and they're qualified to do so. And these 13,000 soldiers, these 3.5 combat brigades, served honorably, and they were just kicked out only because they were gay.
We've seen General John Shalikashvili speak up for changing the policy very prominently and recently, but we've also seen more than 1,000 retired high-ranking officers, flag and general officers for the military, the name of the group, who came out in March with an open letter to President Obama saying, "Our experience leads us to have great concern about repeal." They said it would have bad effects on morale, discipline, unit cohesion, and military readiness. What do you say, and where do you think that resistance is coming from?
Listen, Tom, you know, I respect your opinion, but I stand with these two great Marines on your program, and I will tell you that, you know, when I was in Baghdad 6 years ago in 138-degree heat, paratroopers on the ground, we didn't care, you know, what race you were, what color you are, what religion you are, or what your sexual orientation was. We cared whether or not you could fire them for assault rifle, if you can kick down a door in Baghdad, and could you do your job so we could all come home alive. That's what they cared about, and that's what we care about. And so, you know, I stand with our soldiers and, frankly, the overwhelming portion of Americans, as well as with Colin Powell and the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who you mentioned already.
Congressman Murphy, you know, over the course of recent years, we've done shows here on problems with sexual abuse in the U.S. military. As more and more women have played more and more roles, been more and more prominent in the field. And we've heard terrible stories about the, you know, from women in the military about the abuse, and this was heterosexual. Does it just expand the field, the possibilities for sexual abuse to allow openly gay military members? Does it just, we know that's been a problem already in heterosexual terms. Does it just make a bigger problem if we expand the field here?
Well, Tom, you know, anytime, you know, you have 18 that, you know, 24-year-olds, you know, and that's, that happens at every college campus, that happens in the military, that happens in public. The fact is that, you know, that's the fear-mongering, you know, of the far right who doesn't want to change this policy. But I will tell you that if there is sexual misconduct, if there is any type of assault, whether it's with homosexuals or heterosexuals, that's why we have the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's why we have regulations in place to deal with that. But, you know, the you know, just act because of fear, oh, well, this bad things could happen. Listen, we would, you know, our army would still be segregated and that was the case. And that was the argument back in the 1950s, when half the country, by the way, was still segregated. But our military led the way to say, listen, we all wear one uniform, we all wear green, and we're all going to get the job done together.
Do you think President Obama is going to deliver on his promise to change his policy? What kind of support are you seeing for your legislation, Congressman?
We've had overwhelming support, you know, in the Congress. You know, in my, you know, week now that I've been quarterbacking this, in the Congress, we have over now 161 co-sponsors. We need 218 to vote for it. So, you know, we're inching closer and closer, and I'm acting with a sense of urgency because time is the essence to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. So it's a very exciting time.
Congressman Patrick Murphy, former member of the 82nd Airborne, served in Iraq, now spearheading the effort to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the U.S. Congress, representing Pennsylvania's 8th District. Patrick Murphy, Congressman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom. You're a great American.
Right back at you. Julie Stone and Eric Alva, please stand by. Let's go to Pete in Boston. Pete, you're on the air.
Yes. Tom, great show as usual. Listen, this is a subject close to my heart. I was a combat Marine veteran of 1st Marines in Vietnam as a rifleman scout.
Okay.
And I, again, I applaud your two veteran advocates for this service. However, here's my question, particularly with the combat, with the grunts, the infantry. I happened to be out in November in 2008 at Camp Pendleton. And I was very fortunate to meet 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines before they were on their fourth deployment. I spoke to a lot of young Marines, particularly E5 and belows. These are the team leaders, the squad leaders, the platoon sergeants who do the, most of the fighting over there, mm-hmm. and the grunts, okay? Mm-hmm. Most of these guys, to a man, when I ask, how do you feel? Are there gays in the military? Sure, there probably is. But the don't ask, don't tell, they don't say anything. And what bothers me is people who have not been in the infantry kind of make these decisions, okay, you know, a lieutenant or a captain, hey, get it done. That goes from lieutenant, goes to platoon sergeant down the ranks. Now, who does the job? It's the squad leaders. It's the, you know, and now if you get a guy in a unit like that where these 18 to 22-year-old guys have a reaction like, oh, if somebody comes up openly gay, I don't want him in my squad. So now you're focusing on life and death, and you've got this dissension. I wonder how, you know, people can who are not in the, it's particularly combat. You can do 25 years in any service, but if you haven't been in the infantry, if you haven't had boots on the ground, actual combat, I think you got to step back and say, hey, wait a minute.
Pete, we've got your point. Let us take it straight to the Staff Sergeant Eric Alva, who's with us from San Antonio. Eric Alva, what do you say to Pete?
Well, you know, and thank you, Pete, for your service. You know, I served in Somalia in 92, 93, and during, you know, before Black Hawk Down, and I lived in the stadium, and I was one of those young E4, E3s. I was a non-commissioned officer, corporal, and I was a fire team leader, and I served in the infantry in most of my 13 years in the Marine Corps. And, you know, and I have to tell you, some members on my fire team knew I was gay. But you know what? At 5'1", at 102 pounds, people respected me because I was a darn good Marine. People said, you know, don't mess with him. You know, he's like a 6'2" in hiding, but he's a darn good leader. And, you know, and people didn't even reflect on the fact that I was gay. People were reflecting on the fact that he, you know, I was doing my job. I was passing on good leadership. And, you know, and here we are 2009, and a lot of those Marines ever since 1991, 93, 97, as for the years that I've stayed in, have contacted me. Captains, colonels, you know, sergeants, corporals, people I served with, and everybody stood with me and said, you know what, I am not surprised, because even back then I knew, and those who didn't know said they figured it out and said they didn't care. He's a darn good Marine, and you know what, I would go to war with him anytime. And on that convoy that day I got hurt, two people knew that I was gay, but no one said, don't save his life. People worked together to bring me home because, as the congressman said, we all wear one color, green. So, and I know Julie can support that as well, but you know, it's the leadership. It's the leadership behind the person who's leading that job, and it was my leadership and my training, and it was my patriotic duty to the oath of this country that, you know, I do a job to serve the people of this nation. Not the selected few, but for everyone. And I beg to differ with people who, you know, I sacrificed. I shed blood for this country. And those people who oppose me, I gave you that freedom of opinion. But, you know, I know I was a good leader, and no one can deny that fact.
Staff Sergeant, I'm looking here at public opinion polls. Annenberg, Fox News, Zogby, all showing Americans, civilians, supporting allowing gays to serve anywhere from 67% approval to 73% approval to 79, or Gallup found 79%, Fox 64%. But, you know, Pete's saying, look, in an individual squad or platoon, there could be somebody who's uncomfortable with it. Just never mind the public opinion polls. How does that work out?
Well, you know, it's changing because, I mean, look at society today. 15 years later, I go around the country now speaking on college campuses and even, you know, high schools and you know, kids today, and I mean that loosely, kindly, that, you know, young individuals are coming out and speaking out more on who they are. I think it's because they're born with iPods already in their little cubicle and stuff. And but it's just, you know, kids today aren't going to take no anymore. And so what happens is that, you know, when they join the military, they've already been in society and, you know, high school captain, football teams, you know, it doesn't matter, or people have already started dealing, you know, with the diversity that exists in this country. So when they get into these fire teams and these squads and everything and find out that you know, that they're a squad leader is gay or something, and those who say, well, I can't serve in the military with those people, then good luck on finding a job in society, because when you exit the military into society today and all these major corporations are instituting non-discrimination in the workplace towards people of orientation and gender identity, you know what? We have to move forward. We have to, you know, accept the diversity of this country of people that are capable of doing a job, because it's their merit. It's their professionalism and their leadership is what we're judging. We're not judging their conduct. You know, and going back to the whole sexual assaults and everything, whether homosexual, heterosexual, as the congressman said, you know, you deal with that under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, just as you deal with that in society, the laws and the regulations that are set forward. But a person who can be openly gay and serve his troops will prove the point that, in fact, the matter that I can do a job just as anyone else. It's not about my orientation. It's not about the color of my skin or my ethnicity or where I was born. And, you know, we have people that are not even American citizens dying for this country, that you know, Korean, Chinese or whatever. And people, well, you mean, what's the point there to say, well, you know, they're not real Americans, but, you know, thank you for, you know, giving us our freedom.
Pete, there's another view. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Barbara in Iowa City, Iowa. Barbara, how are you looking at Don't Ask, Don't Tell these days?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My daughter just graduated from high school this year, and since she was a young child, she talked about a military career, much to her father's and my bewilderment. And but she's also been very open as a lesbian since she was 12 years old. So she refuses to enlist, and I feel that the military is missing out on some very good people because of this policy.
So change it, and your daughter might be a candidate to join, and the military has been looking for good members. Julie Sohn, what do you say to Barbara and her daughter?
You know, I work various events, gay pride events, for different organizations, and I've met people like Barbara's daughter who want to join the military, and, you know, they struggle with it because they want to serve. This is an amazing country, you know. My parents are, they immigrated from Korea, so for me, you know, this is an honor to be able to serve, and it is frustrating. Like, basically, when you're asking a gay or lesbian citizen, you know, if they want to serve, they have to, you know, hide who they are and who they love. That's a great sacrifice, which people are doing. You know, the Urban Institute says that there are approximately 65,000 gay Americans serving in the military right now, and it is a hard life. But I think that we are missing out on a great deal of people. I serve with them every day in the LAPD. The LAPD, just like a lot of the federal government agencies, protect sexual orientation. They don't discriminate based on that. And you have all these great people that the military needs. And a lot of them are choosing not to serve, or they serve their initial enlistment and then they leave.
In what context did you speak up for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and how did it get you discharged?
It was actually through some of the events. Service Members United used to be the Call to Duty Tour, and back in 2006, they did a series of events, panels at various universities, predominantly in more conservative areas. And some of what I said and my activities were documented in the media, and somehow the Marine Corps found out, even though I was not in an active reserve unit at the time. I was actually in the individual ready reserves. And an investigation was initiated. And I know for a fact that the investigation was passed around. A lot of people didn't want to touch it because you know, my role in the Marine Corps was a public affairs officer, and it's a very small military occupational specialty. And a lot of people knew that I did really good work on the ground in Iraq and Fallujah specifically, and just when I was on active duty in the Marine Corps. And it took quite some time. I helped out with the tour in 2006, and it wasn't until 2007 where I received a phone call from a Marine colonel in the reserves who basically read me my rights.
And left you on the outside looking. And Julie Sohn, we have to take a short break here. Eric Alva in San Antonio, Texas. We're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and whether it's time to repeal. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the push to accept gays in the military, to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Candidate Barack Obama promised to make the repeal a reality. That has not happened. There is a strong push for, there is a strong push against. We've been talking with members of the new national campaign Voices of Honor, veterans and their supporters who want to see the military policy change. Julie Sohn is former Marine Corps captain, served in Fallujah in Iraq. Eric Alva is a former Marine Corps staff sergeant. He was the first American wounded coming over the border from Kuwait into Iraq, lost his right leg as a result of stepping on a landmine there. We're joined right now from Washington, D.C. by Dustin Siggins. He's in the Army National Guard Specialist, Washington, D.C. Army National Guard. Joined the Federal Reserves in 2004, the National Guard in 06. He's now 23 years old. He's blogged about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He's called it a compromise that works and said, let's not change it. Dustin Siggins, Specialist Siggins, thank you very much for being here.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me.
You know, there's any number of military veterans who want to see this change. We have two of them with us today, Dustin Siggins. You're against changing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Why?
First, let me start by saying, just clarifying, I'm representing myself, not the military.
Got it.
And in no way am I trying to disrespect people on the line or anyone else, because that's not what, to me, this issue is about.
Okay.
There's
understood.
A couple of reasons I think this policy is good. First of all, I think there'll be a large cost in trying to figure a way to have open homosexuals in barracks. I don't imagine you can put gay men with heterosexual men, because similarly, we're trying to prevent relationships by separating men and women, and therefore, I'm not sure that would work. And I'm not sure you can put gay men with women because of the safety issue or potential relationships that would interfere with the mission. And that's what I'm all about, is trying to make sure the military is efficient. I think if we can prove over time that it's not necessary, perhaps a change should be instituted, but I think it should be a long, slow, investigative process that I'm not sure it's time to do that yet.
What's your experience been? Have you served with gay military members, even if they weren't open about it because of this policy? Have those around you served with them? How's it worked?
I'll admit I've not been overseas. I've only had stateside National Guard duty. But we did have a gay guy in our unit. People knew he was gay. It wasn't an issue, which may lead people to think, well, then you're okay with people being gay. And I am, but I think that if someone is, if you make it an open policy, then you're going to have a lot more issues with relationships and whatnot, whereas kind of now you don't make a big deal out of it, we don't make a big deal out of it, which I think allows people to feel more comfortable in the circumstances surrounding the kind of environment the military is designed to be.
Eric Alva, how about it? You hear Specialist Siggins saying, you know, there'd be cost, what do you do about the barracks? And he likes Don't Ask, Don't Tell because it keeps the whole issue kind of tamped down. You say that comes at the price of justice to gay servicemen and women, but you know, what do you say to his practical concern here?
Well, I mean, you know, look at the cost already. We've spent, you know, according to the General Accounting Office, we've spent, since the policy in 1993 and 15 years old, we've spent $200 million to $2.1 billion of taxpayers' money when we investigate and eliminate and replace that, you know, Arabic linguist or, you know, fighter pilot or, you know, motor transport specialist. I mean, every time we discharge someone under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, we are actually, you know, spending more taxpayers' money to fire someone who is, you know, capable and professionally and you know, totally qualified and sometimes above and beyond the skills of anyone else. I mean, you know, your top sniper in Iraq, you rather send him home because he's gay rather than protecting the lives of, you know, troops that can get through a city, or someone who's skilled in explosive ordnance disposal officer who's, you know, can, you know, knows the rounds of a roadside bomb. You rather send him or her home because they're gay instead of saving American lives. It just doesn't make sense anymore. So the cost of it is we wouldn't have to make any changes to the fact of putting gay men with, you know, heterosexual women or things like that. We don't do that at the gym when we go to the gym. And you know, coming from an experience of someone who served his, you know, country overseas five times now, you know, of course, three times in Japan and, you know, once in Somalia during Operation Restore Hope, and then, of course, Iraq. And, you know, and Julie will know this as well, as, you know, serving in Fallujah, serving alongside gay men and women and other people knowing. And, you know, it's not about, you know, who we love or who we live with back home, because when we're over there, it's about a mission.
Would there be or have to be a change in living quarters, as Dustin Siggins suggests, or not? Do you know?
No, there wouldn't be. There would not be, because, of course, going back to what Congressman Murphy said, you're if something were to happen, and that's a stigma, you know, that people always assume that, you know, gay people are promiscuous or things like that. We need to stop thinking like that. you know, the prejudice of people in this country, and we all have prejudices, but when we let them get the best of us and start implementing change in law, then to reserve the rights of people being, you know, having jobs or living where they want or, you know, having the freedoms that they want in this country, then that's discrimination. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, people can still live in you know, close quarter situations and, I mean, you know, and, you know, still of men in the barracks here, women in the barracks there and stuff like that. But if something to were happened, then you deal with the conduct of that person because now they have, you know, conduct on becoming of a military service member, and you deal with that. Because if you don't, then the precedents get started, then it's being allowed, it's being accepted. I mean, you know, it's about qualified men and women who want to serve their country, who can do it openly with not having to worry about, you know, the fact of getting, you know, harassed. I mean, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is the only law in this country that literally forces people to go to work every day and be dishonest about who they are. I mean, we literally force people to go to work every day in this country and to serve their country, but may have a loved one back home. But if something should happen to them because they're in a same-sex relationship, no one from the Red Cross or no one from the military is going to go knock on that door because they're not on that record of emergency data to put down as a beneficiary because of the fear of losing their job because they're serving under this law. I mean, that is cruel. Mm. That's unjust in this country.
Dustin Sickens, what about the issue of equality, the issue in principle? And then also, former Staff Sergeant Alva says, you know, don't worry about harassment. We've got the military code of justice. That'll take care of it.
Well, I think regarding the barracks situation, it's not a matter of homosexuals being promiscuous or not being promiscuous. I said earlier that we do not house men and women together because of potential relationships, because people can be interested in each other or have a high propensity for that. And similarly with homosexuals, I think that would be the same thing. Whether or not they're more or less promiscuous, that's just they're attracted to people, and we cannot house them in an environment where those same people are. Regarding the discrimination factor, I would have to say it is a form of discrimination. I have never experienced it, so I'm not going to try to comment too much about that, to be honest. But I think that people who join the military know the policy is in existence, and so that's a risk they take when they join. I'm not sure I can really respond effectively other than to say it's about military efficiency. I have a number here showing that 10% of the military in a recent poll said they would not re-enlist if the policy was pulled. Military would lose 230,000 people. And I don't know, I think it's 12,000 or so have been pulled from the military because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's not efficient either.
A problem either way there. Julie Sohn, what about that? If you implement this, you're going to see some portion of straight servicemen and women withdraw from the military is the warning.
Well, just to look back in the 1950s when President Truman desegregated the military, there were a bunch of generals who actually threatened to resign, and he told them, "I expect your resignation papers tomorrow." And I sit there, and actually nobody resigned. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, we're just kind of sitting here and talking about hypotheticals, and I can tell you applied within the Los Angeles Police Department, a lot of, you know, gay police officers don't come out, you know, and I'm not sure that they will. I think the difference here is that you won't get fired for being gay or just mentioning your partner. And that's what we're asking for is, like, we want to serve. We have more, like, Eric and I have more in common with Dustin. We want to serve. We have served this great country. And that's what it's about. It's about serving this country and not having to be a second-class citizen, because that's what this particular policy does. It basically codifies discrimination in our federal government. The military is the only government agency that allows this. And we are asking President Obama and Congress to take the lead on this and act. It's one thing to say that you want to repeal this policy, but it's another thing you have to actually act. And that would require an act of Congress to pass this Military Readiness Enhancement Act. I respect Dustin's opinions, but I think in a lot of ways, the men and women of the armed forces are very professional. We have a job to do. People's lives depend on it. Our rights as citizens here depend on the military. And the military is a professional fighting force. And I have no doubts that we can step up to it and do the job and the mission.
Let's turn to our listeners, if I may. In Omaha, Nebraska, Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm in total agreement that this ban should be lifted. I, as a minority, served in the Army myself, do not think that this ban should continue. It's just absurd. As a black man who served in the military for years, decades, it would not allow minorities to even serve. So the ban should be lifted in regards of whether you're gay or not, who cares? And if you're willing to serve our great country, then you should be allowed to serve.
Do you see this as a policy comparable to the discrimination that was once there against African-Americans in the military?
Absolutely, I do. I think not just African-Americans, but just also against anyone who is, contrary to whatever the military believes in. I mean, there's has been, throughout history, it's shown that the military has done different things to ban whoever they feel like banning, which is ridiculous. I mean, they ban minorities, particularly blacks. They banned, now they're trying to ban gays, so, and they've done it for years, so that's ridiculous.
Tom, we hear it loud and clear, and thank you for your call in Omaha. Let's get a call from Rock Island, Illinois. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, two sides in this issue for me, I guess. One, intellectually, I would say yes, that I do believe it's time that we allow gays in the military. I'm totally for that. And I for PAO issues, I definitely want to give too much about myself. But I've been in the reserves for a lot of years. But on the flip side, the mindset of people that tend to join the military are homophobic as a rule. I agree that it's wrong to discriminate, and I do, and absolutely based on race or color. But with sexual proclivity issues, I believe it was a specialist who mentioned earlier as far as housing goes, there are some more complicated issues.
Chris, give us some sense of what experience do you have to suggest that there's an unusual degree of homophobia in the U.S. military?
Oh, just personal discussions with folks. I joined in 1986. I had a 2-year break at service, and I came back in 86. Yeah, I got out in 2004. Came back in 2006.
Okay.
Just general kind of conversations. You know, just sitting around talking with folks, especially people in more of the combat arms, i.e., infantry, things along those lines.
But if this policy were changed, would they just, deal with it or get out?
Well, I don't think they would deal with it well. But here's the issue. I'm also talking about people that primarily, most likely, would not have a lot of contact with those individuals that would join. If I may, in that a lot of, say a homosexual male who would want to join most likely would go into something like military intelligence as a linguist or aircraft control or something along those lines.
Are you sure? I mean, Eric Alva lost his leg on the front lines in Iraq.
True, yes. But I mean as a vast percentage. And I'm not speaking 100% per individual. And I'm definitely not trying to take anything for Staff Sergeant from the Marines. But as a rule, I'm generalizing it.
Yeah, Chris, we'll pick that up, and I appreciate your call. Eric Apple, let me let you respond to Chris.
Well, you know, I respect Chris and as Dustin, I thank them for their service as well. You know, I kind of lost on point of what he was actually saying, but
there's homophobia in the ranks, especially in the combat ranks, and that would make problems.
Yeah, and you make a good point, Tom, because going back to Dustin and going back to Chris, and you always ask that, their experience. What experience has led you to come up with these, these points? My experience and Julie's experience of, and this is hard fact, hard fact of where I served at 22 years old in, the stadium of Somalia in Mogadishu, and I've heard that point over and over again, and I think Dustin said it, that people will resign their commissions, people will leave the military. And Sergeant Major Jones did this at the congressional hearing on the House Armed Services last year when we went to Congress on July 24th and said, you're going to lose a lot of capable men and women if you, repeal this policy. They're all going to quit. My take on that was good luck to Sergeant Major winning the Powerball or the lottery somewhere, because if they leave the military and go work anywhere in corporate America, whether it's for AT&T, McDonald's, wherever you hold a job in this country these days, there are policies in the workplace, non-discrimination against people of sexual orientation and gender identity. Your boss could possibly be gay or, you know, transgender. So if you're refusing to work with people of any diverse background, then where do you want to live these days?
Let me ask Dustin Siggins.
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, Dustin Siggins, would you quit? Would you leave the National Guard? Is it that serious to you, or you think you?
I'll be honest. To me, don't ask, don't tell is well behind making sure we're deployed correctly and many other concerns. Don't ask, don't tell is not. If it was lifted, I wouldn't quit. It wouldn't be a make or break issue for me.
But you'd rather, in your case, keep it there. Julie Sohn,
if I may?
Yes?
There was a column written by former General
Shalikashvili, yes?
There we go. I can't pronounce that.
He supports lifting the ban. Don't ask, don't tell. Yeah.
I think he wrote a really good piece in the Washington Post a few weeks ago. And when he wrote it, he said, let's look at the evidence. And I think, again, I come back to, let's look at the evidence. And let's look at other countries, which he did. He talked about Israel and Canada and Britain.
And Australia, they all have it. Our time is so short, Dustin Higgins. We take your point. Look there. Julie Sohn, I want to hear just one word from you. Do you think this is going to change in Obama's first term? In a word.
Yes, I think so. I think that he will push forward on this and take the lead.
Julie Sohn, former Marine Corps Captain, Eric Alva, Marine Corps Staff Sergeant, Dustin Siggins with the U.S. National Guard. Thanks to all of you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.